No sé lo que pasó, am I doing enough for my people? Am I doing enough? Am I doing enough para la gente?
Para la gente,
para mi gente,
para la gente,
para mi gente,
para mi gente. This is Radio Free Aslan, broadcasting from occupied territory.
Voices from the U.S. Social Forum, 2010, is a joint broadcast of the Lhasa Media Press Association.
And Radio Free Aslan.
The Lhasa Press and Media Association is a group of newspapers, organizations, individuals that are committed to Lhasa liberation of the communities of Las Americas.
Radio Free Aslan is a project of the Chicano Development Center, broadcasting from behind enemy lines.
I am your host, Jose G. Moreno, from the Chicano Development Center and Lhasa Media and Press Association. Also joining me is Roberto Reyes from the Chicano Development Center and Francisco Romero from the Lhasa Media and Press Association. In this segment of Radio Free Aslan, we'll be focusing on how activists and organizers of the U.S. Social Forum see today's social and political problems in the U.S. empire.
My name is Alex Goldenberg. I work with City Life Vida Urbana in Boston. We're at this rally because in Boston there's many foreclosures and evictions happening from foreclosed homes. It's primarily impacting communities of color. And as an organization, we've been organizing tenants and homeowners impacted by this to fight against those evictions and stay in their homes. Chase Bank has been one of the major banks that's been pushing people out of our homes, and that's why we're here today to protest them and tell them that we won't have it anymore. There's really been a lot of highlights. Probably the greatest is just really the excitement and the energy of the broad array of people coming from all different sectors and all different parts of the country. We had a great workshop yesterday about our work and connecting it with people who are doing similar work in Atlanta and Rhode Island and around the country. It was also a highlight yesterday learning about strategies and different popular education techniques that people are talking about to pitch this idea of socialism for the 21st century.
This is Dylan Miner. I'm with Just Seeds, Artist Collective, and I'm here at the U.S. Social Forum tabling and selling our print wares. Just Seeds is a artist-run cooperative. We have just over 25 members throughout North America, from Mexico City in the south to Montreal in the north, from the east to the west coast. And we're a decentralized collective of artists who make work both individually and collaboratively. We just finished a portfolio of 26 prints dealing with the issue of ecological justice. And we just have a new book out as well called Firebrands, looking at radical figures in the history of the Americas and folks that have been written out of the schooling you may have gotten when you were a child. Just Seeds has been involved in radical politics in this country for a few years now. And we are here because, one, we're doing workshops, both as a collaborative, as a collective, and as well as individually. And we're here to network and kind of connect with people that we both know and work with in the past, but also make new connections as well. Well, if you look here down here at the table, we have a flyer that lists some of the workshops. So one of the ones that Just Seeds participants, some of the collective members are in, and include titles such as Popularizing Radical Politics, Visiting as Indigenous Activism, which was one I did yesterday, Communication for Liberation, the World Cup, Sports and Social Justice. The one that was specifically about and by Just Seeds is called Artists and Social Artists and Movements, the Just Seeds Portfolio Project. And then tomorrow, on Friday, we have Reanimating Social Movement Histories Through Visual Culture, Eradicating Hate from the Immigration Debate, and also Grassroots Media Networks versus Immigrant Criminalization. And each of those aren't specifically Just Seeds projects, but they're all ones that Just Seeds collective members are participating in. I think that's one of the things that one of the dilemmas of the left has dealt with, I think, for quite some time. And in one of the projects that two of the members, Fabian Rodriguez and Josh McPhee, did a book called Reproduce and Revolt. And one of the importances of that book is that it has very exciting and interesting visual images that folks can use in their own flyers and their own visual materials. Because as artists in the collective, we all identify as activists and we all identify as organizers. And one of the things that we fear is that oftentimes, particularly grassroots organizations, don't pay as much attention to the visual qualities as do the powers that be, as do the capitalists and the large corporations. And so if we're going to combat that system, we need to pay and begin to pay just as much attention to the way things look and the importance of that, because we are all kind of so kind of interested in the way things look, whether we think about it intellectually or whether we know we think about it, or whether it's just something we kind of do viscerally. And so as collective, right, I think we see the work we do as both kind of activist and organizer in orientation, but also very much interested in the visual qualities of it. We've worked with unions, we've done some work for SEIU, we've worked with other grassroots organizations, and then we've just done a variety of other projects on our own that are very much operating within, say, the gallery, university, and gallery system. But we kind of go back and forth between all of those different spheres, between organizing projects, between visual arts projects, and just between street-based activist projects and just street art projects.
I'm Mary Tremani. I'm part of Just Seeds, and I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're an artist cooperative. We're a group of social, environmental, justice-minded printmakers who work together on projects, on art campaigns for different issues, and also individually work on prints on issues that are important to us. So we collaborate with each other and with social movements. I'm here because I came to the Allied Media Conference last weekend as well to teach workshops on silkscreen printing, and especially mobile silkscreen printing, making silkscreen printing really adaptable and accessible to a lot of people, and to teach it to the youth in Detroit who are part of Detroit Summer and then leave the equipment behind. So they'll have a silkscreen lab that'll be accessible for Detroiters after we leave. So we wanted to do some hands-on silkscreening here at the forum and give people a taste of what it's like to print. Well, I think we already do. I mean, a lot of the artists in Just Seeds will design graphics specifically for movements and not charge for them, or create a run of prints and donate the funds to various movements, especially like Fabiana Rodriguez, Melanie Cervantes, and Jesus Barraza. They donate a lot of money to different movements, and they're really interconnected with their communities in the Bay Area. We also do projects like our newest portfolio project is Resource. It's about resource extraction, and we create graphics that can be then used for free by different grassroots groups. We did one a few years ago for Critical Resistance about prisons, and we just created all of these new graphics that can then be used by people in the prison abolitionist movement for the work that they're doing. But we also create these beautiful art objects that can then be used as a conversation starter and a teaching tool to talk about these issues. I think art, you know, can communicate things that you can't just communicate with the written word or through speaking. There's like an emotional impact that images can have that can really resonate with people and help to really communicate about a topic.
We're at Coba Hall in Detroit. My name is Sharon M. Detz Cogswell, and our association is a Coalition Against Racism, Deleting Mascots in Sports. The form of injustice that is happening in the schools and in the education of everybody here in America is wrong by having Native people as mascots. They make us caricatures, and it gives children learning in school now the wrong idea of what Native people are, and we're here to fight that. Well, just being here at the forum gives us a much broader view, and we're able to meet and hook up with other people that are here that have the same type of social justice issues that we could get together with. And the power really comes from the people. And if we join together, we can get a whole lot more done. We do also have a resolution for Governor Granholm And so that we wish that she would put it at a state level, that the state would issue that it's wrong to use natives as mascots or logos in any state-funded school. Mascot struggle actually was Native people's struggle. And for many years, it wasn't until 1978 that the United States government gave us back our freedom of religion. Before 1978, we were not allowed to sing our songs, to have any type of religion in any kind of social outlet. And we did it. We did it underground. I can remember there's a song that our people have to sing when we leave this world and go to the next world. And we have to cross a river. And we have to, the people in this world have to sing that song so those people can get over to the other world. If that song is not sung, they can't get over there and they're just trapped. So I can remember as a little girl in the wintertime going down in our basement and everybody holding hands and singing our relatives across the river. And in the summertime, we just went way out into the woods somewhere and had our ceremony out there. And that was before 1978. And the struggle, we struggle for something new every year, but we are not people with big noses. We are not people with big teeth. We are not alcoholics, and we are not as portrayed by all the sports teams that want to dehumanize us or insensitize people to Native people.
Hi, my name is Maria from Detroit, and I work with One Michigan. We're hoping to get awareness about the DREAM Act and how important it is that we pass it this year, and we're trying to get support from a nationwide community. It's pretty much a bill that's in Congress right now that would allow undocumented students like me the right to go to college. It would be a requirement for them to be here before they were 16, have good moral standing, graduate from high school, and then go to college or military for at least 2 years. Because I'm undocumented, and I know a lot of other students are undocumented, and even if I wasn't undocumented, I think that the right to education is something that you don't earn by having a citizenship. It's something that comes for everybody. You shouldn't have to fight for an education or for civil rights. It's something that everybody deserves. Because people don't really know about it. Like, they don't know the specifics. They think that people come here and they take their jobs, they take their income, but we pay taxes every year. We provide more support to the community than just taking jobs. And if people really knew, like, the reality about what's going on, about what we do every year, about our struggles, maybe they would start to understand why something like the DREAM Act should not be postponed until tomorrow or until something else comes along, but it should be dealt with now and should be passed. I think it's very un-American to say that you're not going to provide education or health care to someone who needs it. Would you see someone lying in the middle of the road and say, they look undocumented, I'm going to turn away and keep going? I think that is not American values. It's not human values to do something like that. It is totally inhumane. And we have a lot of events going on. We had a huge march in Ann Arbor on May 1st where President Obama was. We had a rally. We had another one in Kalamazoo a few weeks ago. And we do like a lot of events to get awareness. Last week we had like an obstacle course for kids and to get their parents aware about what's going on. So pretty much like awareness events to get people involved in it. We're hoping he does. Right now he really hasn't, there's a lot of talk about it, but talk's cheap. We really need some action. And I think this year we're going to pass it. This will be our year.
Hi, my name is Naomi. Jobs of Justice is a network of 45 different coalitions throughout the United States. And basically what we do is we bring student groups, faith groups, community groups, and unions to work on various social justice issues especially as it relates to workers' rights issues. We also work on immigrant rights issues, global justice, and we're part of the Inner Alliance Dialogue, which is a network of an alliance of six different networks. Our organization is actually a member of the NPC, which is the committee that helped plan the U.S. Social Forum. And what we're interested in, or it's a great space, actually, the U.S. Social Forum. It's for collaborative thinking, for collaborative planning, moving forward, and to see how we can form new relationships with organizations that we haven't been working with, and strengthening the relationships with the organizations that we have been working with. And so it provides us the opportunity to do that. So we have a website. It's www.jwj.org. It's www.jwj.org. And we also have a blog on our website where folks can keep up to date on the various issues that we're working on. But you also can find information about the local coalitions in your area that you can contact if you want to be a part of Jobs and Justice.
My name is Harry Hoffman, and I'm from St. Pete, Florida, chapter of Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. We are a multiracial, intergenerational group of people from across the U.S. and various other small U.S. territory islands, converging here on the U.S. Social Forum to end poverty and to bring attention to the federal government that we are not lowlifes. We are not vagabonds. We are human people who need housing, fair wage jobs, medical, healthcare, all that. In regards to like the local St. Petersburg, Florida area, there's relatively very few jobs, just like Michigan. The homeless situation, there's 6,000 to 8,000, upwards to 10,000, not only men and women, but families as well that are homeless on the streets or in shelters. There's not enough shelters around to house all the homeless. The way I look at it is like this. The government should not have bailed the banks out. They should have bailed the people out. We, the people, as American citizens here in the U.S. and the U.S. territories, should not be losing our homes. And the jobs should not be going overseas. We need all that here. Yes, if they want to contact the website, there's it's the economichumanrights.org and refugestpete.org.
Being part of TSJ, we're always trying to build coalition, build networks throughout the United States with other educators, other movements, and because no matter what, we're all under the same we're under the same oppression, the same system that's oppressing us. So I guess like the main goal coming to the U.S. Social Forum was to build further coalitions and network with other educators. TSJ members presented a workshop called Another Education is Possible. And, you know, it was an amazing opportunity for educators across the country. It was organized by people from Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Oakland, San Francisco, and Chicago. We all came together and presented a workshop, and really came out of that with an understanding that we all might have some different struggles, but there's all similarity as well, and we're all fighting together, and we should really use this opportunity at U.S. Social Forum to network with each other more and build a stronger movement in the fight for a just education. Fortunately, I don't have to deal with that, but I do have family members that have gone through higher education, and it's been very difficult for them. They're still stuck in it because it's like continuing community colleges because that's all they can afford, and it's taking a year off, and you know, they're like 20 something and they're still like not even through their basics. So when I think about the Dream Act, I feel as if there should be no negotiation. We should not be something where we settle for, okay, yeah, we'll do the military, we'll join it, we'll do our thing, and give us this. No, it's not about we're going to do this and you give us that. It's about we deserve the right to do this. I mean, I just came from a workshop where they said, actually, Comandante Marcos sent a video message saying, let's not forget that the U.S. took the land that is now known as the United States of America, but it really was Mexico's land. So when you think about having the right to an education, that's just absurd to me. I think everybody should have that right. You know, no, there's no in between. There is no negotiation for that. Everybody should have that. One thing that brings to mind is in education right now, they're actually doing massive budget cuts as they are in other cities. But one of the direct attacks is on bilingual education. And I see that as a direct attack on the Latino community in Chicago. Just a little side story. There was a town meeting in a burb of Chicago, which has now become highly Mexican because it's Melrose Park. It's like everyone's been going there. And, you know, it's to get out of the neighborhood, to get out of the hood. That's where you go now. And that community and at town hall meeting, the interpreter was specifically given a script and not completely interpreting what the board was presenting to the parents of the community. And, you know, the parents spoke out. There was an outrage. There was an outbreak. Like, how dare you think that we're stupid and that we wouldn't catch this and what's wrong with you? So I feel like there is already an attack on a lot of the Latino community, especially in education, by just doing this action of cutting all these bilingual ed programs, which are so necessary for us to grow and to become, go into higher ed. And
as teachers for social justice, you know, as a teacher, we are also learners and students. So what we've been doing is traveling the country and learning from other organizations on their practices and organizations on how we can incorporate that as teachers for social justice within our city. Our city is a hotbed for political activity, as is California, New York, East Coast, and the Midwest. And as one of those hotbeds, we try to incorporate practices from throughout the nation. And like I said, as teachers, you know, we also want to become learners from others and their practices. So what we've learned traveling to North Carolina, to San Diego, to Milwaukee, and bringing other teachers is that liberatory pedagogy that teaches children, parents, and fellow teachers how to think critically about themselves and how they see themselves within the world and how to change their world and recreate and transform their world is critical not only to us as individuals, as teachers, but to our students and to our parents and to society as a whole. And we hope to unite those others, practitioners in this same philosophy and strengthen our movement, our education for liberation movement, so we could build a coalition of teachers, parents, students, activists. The state goals for assimilation has always targeted educational practices for control. Deculturalization has been a practice within the United States since the inception of colonization. Deculturalization removed cultural heritage from Native Americans, has removed bilingual practices from Latinos, Chicano razas, people since the inception of their assimilation into this country. And its current practices are currently deculturalizing our students into forming them into the mentality of colonized people. So that practices is in continuation of its long stem practices of deculturalization of colored people, of raza people. And as part of the Arizona bill, I've heard recently that even up to the university level, they've stopped the teaching of a philosopher educator that we practice a lot of our theory from, Paulo Freire, and they're trying to ban the Paulo Freire's theory at the university level. And as a student of Paulo Freire, who teaches liberatory education, who teaches one to critique his world, critique himself, and critique his oppressor, you know, to ban that is a sure sign that they want to control people and control their minds in order to continue the oppression that has been since the inception of this country. The educational issue is tied into also the immigration issue, the jobs, the workers' right issue. We were on a protest earlier today with some farm workers that are coming out of North Carolina, and those farm workers send their students, their children to schools that are being attacked, while they're being attacked at work, while their teachers are being attacked, while and all these attacks are going on working class people. So people of color need to stand up together. And that's why we're here today at the Social Forum, because we see all our issues interrelated with environmental issues, immigration issues, social workers, everything. All these issues are interrelated. And education, we feel as teachers, is a key component to opening up the minds of our people and uniting our people. So education is at the core, as with a lot of the other issues, in reframing the fight within ourselves.
My name's Kara Flores, and I'm from Guam. We're here at the U.S. Social Forum because this is a really important time for our island. Right now, the U.S. wants to increase their presence there. They already own one-third of the island, and much of that land was taken illegally. And so you have a displacement of families, destruction of, you know, sustainability for those families. And this is actually a very significant threat to our race. And so we're here to share that with people. Okay, well, let's go back to World War II, when the United States deserted the island of Guam, knowing that the Japanese would come in and attack. So they left the Chamorro people there. The Chamorro people who were serving in the U.S. Navy requested to be evacuated. They evacuated all of the white Navy personnel, their wives, their children, their dogs, but they would not evacuate the Chamorro people. And so the Japanese were initially very cruel. And then when the U.S. came back, they bombed the entire island of Guam and destroyed, you know, the farmers' crop fields, a lot of the areas for fishing. And so that was, and then, of course, they took the land when they came back. And so that was, these families who once had land were then landless, or they were unable to provide for their families. The same holds true today. You know, the United States owns a third of the island. They want to take more now. And these are, again, fishing grounds. You know, this is how families survive. And we're very tied to our land. Our land is very important to us. And so for the United States to want to take more land, it's stripping us of the very identity that we have left or that is remaining. And so it's... But that's not the only impact. You know, with the U.S. buildup, our island has 170,000 people. It's going to increase our population by another 70,000 people, which is almost a 40% increase. That threatens our infrastructure. We cannot accommodate 70,000 more people. We can't accommodate the more kids in our schools. We can't. Our water is threatened. So that's our very lives, you know. And so it's a real injustice because our community enrolls in and fights in and dies in the U.S. Armed Services at five times the rate of any other country in the U.S., but we're not protected by the Constitution. So Guam is actually a mockery of democracy. It's very obvious that the rights that supposedly are protected by those serving in the service are not, you know, they're not real for us on Guam. We don't have rights. We're the last, or we're one of the remaining U.S. colonies, and we're fighting for our freedom. What we're doing here is we participated in a couple of panels, and then we're also tabling. One of the most important things that we're doing here is connecting with people who are experiencing the same struggle that we are. So, you know, there's South Korea, there's Okinawa, you know, a lot of the Latin American countries have also been affected by U.S. bases. And so we're trying to connect with people whose struggle is the same as ours and learn from those movements and also share what we can with those movements. So that's one of our real goals at the U.S. Social Forum. And then also just to share our struggle and tell people our story, because we're such a small island and we're so far away that it's very important for us to come here so that people can hear what we're going through.
This monthly podcast is brought to you by the Chicano Development Center, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to education and political empowerment through grassroots coalition building. We believe in the indigenous sovereignty of the Chicano people in the United States, and that true social and political change begins with the people. Our style of low-intensity organizing endeavors to build intentional communities within greater communities. The motivating force behind low-intensity organizing is to constantly challenge the status quo as to the treatment and economic status, not only of Chicanos and other indigenous people, but of all oppressed people. At the Chicano Development Center, we believe that resistance begins with education, organization, and preparation. We believe that raza must take action on a regular basis, not just in times of crisis.
Que mató una, oh my people.
We rock to the east, we rock to the west. We're rocking as Jays, what we love the best.